Well, all right. Chris Alberta sitting in for Paul. A little bit redundant, perhaps, after the technical difficulties. The guys bailed me out there, and the crew is happy to actually have me talking to a microphone where I can hear. So welcome back in. Listen, I heard my good buddy Jason Rowe this morning on Guy Gordon's show, and part of the reason I wanted to get him on was because I have become, as I said earlier, a little bit enamored with the RFK Jr. campaign, in large part because there's a libertarian streak in me that is just dying for someone who is reasonable, a bit anti-government in some aspects. And I love the fact, I just adore the fact that he is legitimately taking votes away from both parties, almost in a relatively equal sense. And there's issues that I think all of us agree with him on. Why is he not getting more press? And I don't want to talk about Haley, and I don't want to talk about Trump and Sleepy Joe and everybody else. I want to talk about Bobby Jr. Is there really a chance there? Jason Rowe, the principal at Rowe Strategic, former executive director of the Michigan Republican Party, and a purveyor of dive bars everywhere. Jason Rowe, welcome to the program.
Wish I was in a dive bar now. I have to get ready for St. Patrick's Day.
Is this world not just turning into one giant dive bar anyway, Jay?
Touche.
Listen, humor me. I know this is a touch out of your wheelhouse in terms of what's really going on, but tangentially, I look at this RFK Jr. campaign, and having done a pretty deep dive the last couple weeks on all of his videos, a lot of his speeches, a lot of what he's put in print, I find myself increasingly admiring the man for being not only intellectually gifted, but just deeply genuine and patriotic. And I'm wondering, if more people saw this stuff, would he be garnering a bigger share of the electorate right now?
I do think he would gain from that, and I think he will gain from that, particularly as he continues to make an impact. At some point, as this race settles down, assuming that it is Donald Trump versus Joe Biden, you know, he's going to be a factor. You know, whether he is drawing 10% or 20%, who does he take from? Who does he help? What states does he change the trajectory? So I don't know he's in a position to win, but I think he's in a position to have an impact. And that's what will be interesting, is when the deep dives start, do they continue to marginalize him as some type of fringe candidate, which is what I'd say the mainstream media has been doing as of, you know, now? Or do they start to treat him as the legitimate heir of the Kennedy legacy and somebody who has spent most of his life on the liberal left, who's finding some common cause with people on the right now?
Yeah, quite a bit, from vaccines to protecting middle class America and small business, and on and on. And much of what he spends time on outside of the environmental and health-based stuff, in terms of really rallying against private equity taking over some of these small business chains that so many people depend on as a lifeline, he is enormously attractive to very reasonable, even somewhat centrist thinkers who are just so tired of the divisiveness of this environment. But is his only chance to really get on all 50 ballots the Libertarian Party just taking him on? Because I don't really have anybody else. Or am I wrong on that?
No, I mean, ballot access is the number one challenge to non-traditional candidates, because only the established political parties have a process by which they can put a candidate on the ballot. There's, I don't know the number, but a good number of states that, as an independent candidate, the threshold for getting ballot access makes it impossible. So you can't even compete in all 50 states as a truly independent candidate, particularly given, you know, where he's starting in this process. So getting on the Libertarian line would give him the ballot access that he needs. There's a bit of infrastructure within the Libertarian organization nationally, but, you know, some of his views might run contrary to Libertarian doctrine. I do think, though, when you talk about the issues that he's speaking to, the Kennedy family, for what, you know, people think of them as kind of political royalty, and obviously they come from great wealth and kind of the, you know, the one percenters of the Boston Brahmin types. But they've always been avatars for the working class. They've always, you know, whether it was John F. Kennedy or Teddy Kennedy, always represented themselves as people fighting for the working class. And as the two political parties have changed, and the Republican Party is more about the working class today than it used to be, and the Democrats are all about the elites, but, you know, the Kennedys fit more in line with today's Republican Party than they do today's Democratic Party.
Yeah, and we see a bit of that. You know, he's what, just almost 70 years old, and he's in phenomenal shape. Obviously, the voice thing, if you're not familiar with him, he's got a specific disorder where the nervous system is attacking his voice. It makes him sound a touch feeble, but clearly he is as healthy as an ox, doing, you know, push-ups and things and pull-ups. And I mean, he's a pretty virile kind of guy. At this point, between the Democrats and the Republicans, which party is a further departure for him from their tried and true recipe?
Oh, I think the Democratic Party has strayed away from where RFK and the Kennedy, family has been throughout the decades. They've been relatively pro-business, pro-growth. They've been more about a social safety net. They certainly, I don't think as a family had ever practiced the kind of balkanization in which we pit American against American based on, you know, their ethnic or religious identities. So I think there's a lot in the Democratic Party's, current composition that would, I think, repel traditional Kennedy family politicians.
Yeah, it is a hard thing to, it's a hard pill to swallow for a lot of the old school liberals. I mean, even what you watched, you know, the Bill Maher's that 10 years ago were considered extremely left, and that they've come so, you know, center that they're bordering on right in a relative sense. And that's oftentimes what I hear when I hear him talk. I say, geez, I don't know any conservative person in my circle of friends who would listen to this and disagree with the vast amount of what he's saying. In fact, I think they would be hard pressed to find a couple things that they would vehemently disagree with. And I think it's a shame that he's not getting more press. Do we see debates at this stage? When you look at the grand stage with Trump and Biden, will we see a debate, if you had to be a better on this, between at least the two of them, if not potentially the three of them?
Oh, I think we'll certainly see Biden-Trump debates. My guess is that Trump will insist upon Kennedy's participation if he sees it advantageous. And, you know, there's some speculation that he helps Trump right now more than Biden. So, you know, I could see him demanding it. I do want to go back to, though, as you were talking about, you know, RFK and where he is vis-a-vis today's Democratic Party. I think in other places, you know, the Democratic Party is far more aligned with corporate America and big business than they ever have been. And historically, that's been where the Republicans, you know, were, you know, carrying water for big business in America. That's changed. And I think that's another place. And, you know, you look at RFK's, you know, long held views on the pharmaceutical industry with, COVID up being the most obvious and the one most impactful on everyone. The idea that, Democrats are now carrying the water for big pharma is a departure from who the Democratic Party was just 10 years ago.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And when I hear him talk, I don't remember who said it. Maybe you would remember because you're an encyclopedia for these things. The goal of our election should be the scenario where both candidates are so appealing and so reasonable that we lay in bed the night before the election still somewhat on the fence because we're just not sure who to vote for because they're both choices are so good. And many, he's been a bastion now for people, especially the younger people, 50 and under, who are saying, I can't stand either of these guys. And will Joe Biden really be the candidate after June 4? I mean, is there with a minute to go, is there a trick left in the DNC sleeve where he actually is not the candidate? If you were to bet on it at this point?
Yeah, I'm not convinced that Joe Biden will be the Democratic nominee in 2024. There's just too much at risk. His poll numbers are awful everywhere. He never trailed Donald Trump in national polls in the 2020 election. He trails Donald Trump by 2 to 4 points in four polls that came out just in the last week. So I'm not convinced he remains. And, I think a change for the Democrats might also impact how people that don't like either choice, you know, behave, either coming back to the Democratic Party, sticking with, you know, a Cornel West and RFK. I wouldn't rule out Nikki Haley running as No Labels. You know, that would explain why she's stayed in as long as she has. So I think there's a lot more molecule bouncing to be seen in the next few weeks and months before we have a real sense of what the field looks like.
There will be molecules bouncing everywhere. Should be fun to watch. Thanks for giving us some perspective on that. I know it's not the mainstream thought process right now, but I find it disappointing that more people aren't at least looking into this and saying, boy, what a stark contrast between the left, the right, and a guy that is firmly planted in the middle. Let's just hope and pray that we see some candidacy that reflects more of that in the future. Thanks, pal.
Thanks for having me.
Dave Rieger, after the break, we're lucky enough, I suppose, despite the unfortunate circumstances, to have Mitch Albom join us. He is stuck in Haiti. Are you aware of this?
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff going on in Haiti where he has the orphanage that he runs. So a lot of stuff going on at the airport, and he'll be able to tell us what's going on.
Yeah, I don't even know what to make of this story other than what I'm reading. Part of the lowering Chris Alberta's blood pressure process has been to consume less news. You know, I've tapered it down from a couple hours every single morning to about 45 minutes to an hour. I didn't even really know that the story was a story until we had to look into it for coverage purposes. It's pretty outrageous what is happening in Haiti.
Oh, yeah.
So it'll be interesting to hear from his perspective. I would bet that he's pretty upset about the lack of help. So we'll get to that in 100%. Just a few minutes. Everybody hang tight. You're going to want to hear this one. It is really, really fascinating stuff.